number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Lay it down. Smack on jack.
Nighttime is the right time.
You know the night.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio
is now.
Oh, got to be.
This is what we do.
From the Quick and Loan Studios, here's Tony D.
Well, it looks like the Carolina Panthers won our which streak would last the longest in the three streaks we were following last week. Golden State losing to Milwaukee Saturday, so they were out. Patrick Kane had his 26-game point streak snapped by the Colorado Avalanche. Boy, at this rate, who are the Carolina Panthers? They play the Giants, the Falcons, and the Buccaneers. I'm trying to find one of the worst teams in the NFL that the Carolina Panthers could lose the streak to. You know, Milwaukee was benefited from circumstance in upending the Golden State Warriors. They had played the previous night in Boston and won in double overtime. They had to play a back-to-back game on the road in Milwaukee, a completely exhausting situation. And tonight, the Colorado Avalanche got to shut out the Chicago Blackhawks and end Patrick Kane's 26-game streak. And the Carolina Panthers still hanging strong at 13-0. Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue through the night tonight. Thanks for joining us. But we got to start the night with the announcement that Bo Ryan is announcing his retirement effective immediately. Now, let me say this about Bo Ryan, and I think it's going to be said over and over and over again, that nobody did a better job with what he inherited than Bo Ryan in 14 years. In 14 years, he turned Wisconsin not only into a good basketball program, a great basketball program, going to the NCAA tournament, reaching the Final Fours that he did, almost winning the national championship over Duke last season. Now, Bo Ryan announced his retirement rather quickly. We saw this with Steve Spurrier in college football. But I think the method of why Bo Ryan wants to do this is kind of noble here. He wants Greg Gard to get the job, his assistant, his associate head coach. He wants him to get the job. This allows him to have the job. This doesn't allow him to take over a program late in the season when it's all gone away. It doesn't mean that Gard takes over and tries to just clean it up and get ready for next season. When Spurrier quit, yeah, the season wasn't going very well, but he also knew the cupboard was bare. Wisconsin is not having their kind of season, but at least Greg Gard gets to coach through the conference schedule. This is, I think is a pretty noble thing for Bo Ryan to do here. With Spurrier, I had a problem with it. For some reason, I'm not having that same problem with it with Bo Ryan. I look at the body of work that Bo Ryan did in similar comparison to what Spurrier had done at South Carolina, basically take the program to another level. And in Wisconsin's situation, he took it further. He made it incredible. Wisconsin was an irrelevant basketball program, and Bo Ryan turned it into a power. You're talking about a conference that has given us Bobby Knight, a conference that has given us Tom Izzo, and now Bo Ryan puts his name among the great coaches of that conference. Again, he announced that he would retire at the end of the season. He is now announcing his retirement effective immediately. Now, I hope Greg Gard is able to take this job, and I hope he's able to do all the things that he wants to do with this job, and I hope he is able to get the gig afterwards that Bo Ryan would like him to have. But he's certainly leaving him an opportunity to do so. Whereas, maybe, if he retires at the end of the season, that just doesn't come away for Greg Gard. So, good luck, Bo Ryan. This was a major surprise. I mean, again, I kind of anticipated that Bo Ryan was going to be leaving. I just did not know it would be leaving immediately after a game against Texas A&M Corpus Christi on a Tuesday night in late December. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. Two Final Fours, seven Big Ten titles, 14 NCAA tournaments. As long as he has been with Wisconsin, he is the best coach that program has ever had. He has the most wins that program has ever had. And like I said, Wisconsin basketball means something. And it means something because Bo Ryan was at the helm of it. And he'll be surely missed. 800-777-2907. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk some basketball as we get into the NBA with Josh Martin. That's going to be at the bottom of the hour from Bleacher Report. Talk a little bit about Golden State and their run. Talk a little bit about what San Antonio is doing. Talk a little bit about what's going on in the Eastern Conference. Some teams that are kind of just a few games above 500. But coming up next, we'll get into the NFL as we get looking ahead to the weekend. That is, some changes and whatnot are going on to the quarterback position. But we do have an answer to one quarterback situation that we've been questioning all week. That's next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
This is Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Working the third shift.
This is Tony D.
Once again, from the Quicken Loans Studios, here's Tony D.
You know, there's two things I try to stay away from in television. I try to stay away from Super Bowl pregame stuff. I've never liked this. I love the Super Bowl, but I do not like Super Bowl pregame stuff. I think it's over the top. By the time we get to the Super Bowl, I know everything I need to know about the game. I don't need 7 hours of breakdowns and features and celebrities telling me who's going to win and anything about the city that they're at. I just don't care. And the other thing that I just try to avoid, and sometimes I can't help it, is the post-debate conversation. We had a debate tonight. The Republicans were debating in Las Vegas. And I try to stay away from like the talking head shows afterwards because what, you know, if you watch it because you were trying to be an informed voter, what do you need Britt Hume to tell you what to vote, what to think, or Charles Krauthammer or somebody on MSNBC or whatever? I tried to stay away from that. But tonight I couldn't help it because tonight the debate was so fun because everyone was yelling and screaming. They were yelling like children. I don't know if you saw, Adam, you don't watch political stuff, do you?
No.
They were
I saw
yelling,
a little bit on Twitter.
Yelling and screaming at each other. And it was so, I laughed out loud because it was like, they had two candidates. One was Trump, of course, yelling back and forth at each other. Like they were just yelling back and forth. Oh yeah, well I'm at 43, you're at 3, and you can't argue your way, can't insult your way to the presidency. And like Carly Fiorina was like, this is why American doesn't like, and it just was this big old blob of blah blah noise. And I just started laughing like this is just so funny. But then afterwards, I'm watching, I just had to watch what people, you know, see what people thought about it. And here's the thing that I think people need to stay away from. I use Twitter on this show a lot. If you want to communicate on the show, you want to get a sports point across, you want to say I'm wrong about something, we love it. We love it when you send something on Twitter, whatever. But I'm not using Twitter as gospel, okay? I'm not using what people on Twitter say as gospel. And that's the biggest problem I have with so many of these debate shows, because right afterwards they'll say, oh, Twitter blew up on... No, Twitter didn't blow up, okay? A very small percentage of the people in America use Twitter on a daily basis. Maybe people may be registered on it or whatnot, but very, very few people are on it all the time. So when you say Twitter is exploding, it makes it sound like there's a large contingency out there that are making fun of this or commenting on this. Stay away from that stuff. It's annoying. I've already got enough problems trying to figure out what these people stand for. I don't need you to throw in crazy social media into the mix. And I bring this up because we do it in sports as well. And it occurred when a couple of weeks ago, about a month ago, when Peyton Manning had one of his worst games as a pro. It was an absolute horrible game. You probably remember it. It was against the Kansas City Chiefs. And again, social media is involved with this because Twitter exploded with everybody saying that Peyton Manning needed to hang it up and the Denver Broncos needed to move on from Manning because Brock Osweiler was going to be the man and be the man for a while. That may still be the case. But like the way you should live your life or run your business, you do not need to worry about what the masses of Twitter think. You do what you think and let the chips fall where they may. Peyton Manning is coming back at practice this week. Brock Osweiler is still going to be the starter. But there is a cautious feel in Denver right now that maybe the offense is problematic with both guys under center. that there is a Broncos offensive issue with both guys. The inability to run the football, the inability of the offensive line to kind of block and protect. So the initial reaction when Brock Osweiler was able to beat the Bears and how everybody was thinking, here's the answer. Here is the answer. The answer is right here. It's right in front of us, especially after they beat the New England Patriots. Now, look, I don't like putting little caveats on wins. When you win, you win. And I want to give you all the credit. I think it sounds like sour grapes when you throw in, but they didn't have this and they didn't have that. However, the Rob Gronkowski injury really affected the Patriots down the stretch of that game. The Broncos offense was never in good hands with Brock Osweiler, only because Brock Osweiler never had the kind of body of work that would indicate that the offense was in good hands. You really need a good number of games for people to determine whether or not you are capable of taking it over full time without any sort of feeling of, hey, we don't have to worry about the quarterback position for a while. That takes a while. You do it out of necessity, and then you make your evaluations games and games and games of work that you have to evaluate. People went crazy after week two of Brock Osweiler. Oh, the Bears game and the Patriots game? Manning should pack up his bags and leave. Manning needs to get out of town. No time for old man Manning. We're moving on with young Brock Osweiler, who's going to lead us to greatness. Slow down, because the offense took a big, big decline. And now, what are the Broncos going to do? So just like in that debate, as I brought up earlier, where you're trying to decide who the president of the United States is going to be, right? It's a pretty big decision. And you don't look at Twitter and go, hey, look at all these people on Twitter and look at all these people reacting to what Ted Cruz said. Who cares what Twitter says about whoever, whatever political candidate says anything? It's the same thing. We tend to overreact quickly. And that's why when people were saying, oh, social media and Twitter blowing up Peyton Manning in Denver, Brock Osweiler in Denver, slow down. Slow down, because the initial reaction is a feeling of relief by those people who want to comment on that sort of thing. If you are a big Denver Broncos fan, Peyton Manning made you nervous the whole season. Even though they started 7-0, you're watching them going, okay, I know we're 7-0 and we're winning games with the defense, but I'm also a smart enough football fan to know this is not something I can count on week in and week out. I just can't count on fumble returns for touchdowns or pick sixes or slowing down a high powered offense. I can't just trust that's always going to be there in the back pocket of the Denver Broncos strategy going into games. How are you going to beat the New England Patriots in Foxborough? Oh, get a couple of pick sixes and maybe return some fumbles for touchdowns. That's really not the game plan. So Manning made people nervous because the offense didn't look like it was ready to go into places like Cincinnati and New England, or heck, even anywhere, face any team, and be able to go toe-to-toe with the other offenses in the AFC come January. Now, here comes this kid, and the offense is looking okay in the game against the Bears. It looks even better in the game against New England. And then you start thinking, oh, now I've got the answer. I'm relieved. So if I'm relieved and I feel fine, why not just make a jab or make a thought on the guy that is heading out the door? And that guy happens to be Peyton Manning. Manning is going to start for this team. I feel it. I just feel it. Because A, healthy, I think he gives them the best chance in the playoffs. If he's not healthy, then Brock Osweiler will start to the end of the season. An unhealthy Peyton Manning, we've seen that game before. A healthy Brock Osweiler, that he runs the system better. But if Manning is healthy, he's going to play. I just feel it. He's going to play. Does he give him the best chance to win a Super Bowl? Between him and Brock Osweiler, he does. Does he give him the best chance to win a Super Bowl amongst the other teams in the AFC? That remains to be seen. You know, Peyton Manning's playoff record is not exactly stellar. It's not exactly sterling silver. It's got a lot of bad blemishes on it. It's got a lot of bad games, bad moments, bad decisions. I mean, it's riddled with some disappointment. And the Colts went to a Super Bowl, but could have gone a few more, you felt like, during his time there. And the same in Denver. So with Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler, I don't know where the future of that offense is going. And I to be honest with you, I can't give you an idea of who runs that offense better when healthy, because I don't know if Manning is healthy. I know he's going to practice this week. What does that mean? I don't know what that means. But I do know we tend to go real crazy and real quick, especially when we see something that makes us go, And I think that's what went on in Denver. 800-777-2907. 800-777-2907. Next hour, we got top five and bottom five of the... did you find it a little easier, harder to do it this week? I'm looking at it going, I think this was a little bit more difficult because I'm now evaluating teams based on circumstances like Cincinnati with their injury. And I'm starting to look at Denver with their offense being in stagnation. Where, do I like another team that even though they've got a little few more losses, a little bit better?
You know, for me, the top five is getting tough just based on kind of what you were saying. You're kind of looking at teams, how they're faring, how they're looking down the stretch, what's kind of going on with them. The bottom five, I find myself just wanting to punish bad teams.
That's
you know
right.
What I mean? Like, they may not be the worst team, one of the five worst teams in football, but the way they're playing, I put them in the bottom five because I just feel like that's what I need to do. So
yeah,
I feel like
got,
the bottom five has been pretty
thing.
Easy for me. The top five is where I'm struggling just placing them. I have my teams, but just placing them kind of based on what's moving forward.
Yeah, I got the same problem is that I have teams in the bottom five that won last week, but they're still bad football teams.
Right. Yes.
They're still teams I don't like. And yeah. I'm still punishing them even though they won. But with the top five, I have teams with good records, but I know down like, okay, they're not the same team. So I have to start. I'm looking at Cincinnati is the number one team on that list. What do I do with the Bengals? If Andy Dalton is out for the rest of the season or next couple of weeks or whatever, AJ McCarron, I'm now evaluating on AJ McCarron. And now I'm find myself going, okay, well, let me see where I position.
And when are we going to find out about Dalton? You know, it's kind of been up in the air since it happened. They're all like, oh, just a few weeks. And then there's some reports being like season done. So, I mean, when are we going to find out? Is it going to be
people jumped the gun really quick
on
Sunday. And that's the other Twitter thing I have a problem with is that, you know, we really want people to break news as quickly as possible. And the people who have this kind of news know they can get it out as quickly as possible. Sunday, they were saying he was out for the year. I thought, come on, he hasn't even had it like looked at yet.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, people, really?
They obviously
I mean, like,
just threw a cast on it immediately without really checking it.
Exactly. He's got to go to the hospital. He's got to get an x-ray. He's got to go get the process. He's got to have a doctor really look at it. That comes Monday. Everybody chill out. Don't go throw speculations. But that's a reevaluation of the Bengals. All right, Josh Martin, NBA. We'll talk about that next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on the nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, let's take a look at the NBA. A lot of stories coming out of the league, including the Golden State Warriors, who just had their win streak come to an end against Milwaukee. But a lot of other teams to get to as well. We bring in Josh Martin from Bleacher Report to talk about all the things going on in the association. How are you, Josh?
I'm doing well. How are you tonight?
Good, man. I appreciate your time. All right, let's start with Golden State. So the streak does come to an end, but this was an incredible run by the Golden State Warriors. In terms of what they did, can you put in some sort of context how special this really was for those who just go, oh, yeah, the Golden State Warriors, sure, they won a bunch of games, but how difficult this run was for them?
I mean, usually teams take a good amount of time, even and especially champions take time to get their acts together at the start of a season. You know, you're coming back from celebrating over the summer and, you know, taking it easy maybe to a certain extent, and you figure, okay, these teams, these really good championship teams, that's why it's so hard to defend the title, because it's hard to, you might fall into that trap of, you know, the trappings of being a champion. But these guys didn't do that. They came back strong to start this season. The previous record was, what, 16-0 to start the season? 15-0? And they went 24-0? I mean, that's like a whole extra, what, two and a half weeks of games that they've went past the previous record. So you got to hand it to them. They got off to a great start, even with Steve Kerr you know, out of action because of his back. And even with Harrison Barnes missing some time, Clay Thompson missing a couple games, it was a remarkable run, and certainly is a fantastic start for a team that clearly right now is the best in the NBA and far and away the favorite to repeat as champions.
And maybe lost in a lot of the hype for the Golden State Warriors, the San Antonio Spurs are having a fantastic season as well. They're only allowing about 88 points per game. They are winning games by a huge margin. In terms of the success, we know about the big three, but now there's some new faces there. In terms of what Greg Popovich is getting out of the Spurs team, what's been their key so far this season?
Their key has been Kawhi Leonard. Has emerged as that guy that they hoped that he would be, you know, that fulcrum of the offense, in addition to being the very best defensive player in the league, the reigning defensive player of the year. You know, he's become a menace on both ends of the floor now. You know, he's scoring upwards of 20 points per game. He's still doing all the things he's done forever defensively, but now he's put it together offensively. He was leading the league in three-point shooting for a certain period of time, and you know, for him to go from get to that point after coming into the league as a guy who's a broken jumper, it's remarkable the steps that he's taken in his game and the heights that he's poised to take the Spurs to now that he has proven himself a very worthy franchise centerpiece in his own right.
Josh, the Houston Rockets got rid of Kevin McHale. They have still hovering around 500, but since the coaching change, are you seeing a better Rockets team, an improved Rockets team, or are we still dealing with a team that's got some issues?
They've made some incremental improvements on that end, but that's still a huge thorn in Houston's side right now. You know, the Rockets' offense has been better. They've been pretty productive since J.B. Bickerstaff took over. I think it really jolted them on that end of the floor. And certainly James Harden has been productive, but defensively this team is still struggling, which, you know, I guess it says a lot about where they are health-wise, especially up front, where Dwight Howard, you never know if he's going to be playing one night or another, and where they're still searching for a steady solution at power forward.
Last season with Oklahoma City, they dealt with a lot of injuries, and it was one of the reasons they didn't make the playoffs. Scott Brooks is out, right, and is Billy Donovan. Now that the Thunder is healthy, do you see a difference with Billy Donovan running a healthy Thunder team than when Scott Brooks had a healthy Thunder team?
Overall, probably not. But there have been some glimpses of the ball movement that we all heard was going to be a big part of OKC offense with Billy Donovan at the head there. And certainly Russell Westbrook has took it upon himself to become more of a distributor. You know, he's second in the league in assists with 9.6 per game. So he's taken it upon himself. And I think now that Kevin Durant is back and is playing well and, you know, it's healthy, that's huge for that team and will open up the offense even more, presumably let it breathe, with defenses paying so much attention to KD and to Russ that it'll open things up for everyone else.
We started the conversation about Golden State, but the best team in the Eastern Conference still remains the Cleveland Cavaliers. Have they tweaked anything from last year's team that won the East?
I think the main thing that they've tweaked, I guess, is their chemistry. These guys certainly get along much better, especially when you look at the relationship between LeBron James and Kevin Love, which was a bit frosty at times. They've gotten off to a great start there. Those guys certainly, and this is a team that understands what's at stake, understands how to get to that point where they can win it all, and they understand that there are reinforcements coming, that Kyrie Irving is coming back. But I think overall, it's just that confidence that's changed about Cleveland. They're not, you know, searching for themselves like they were for so much of last season. They know what they're capable of. They just need to get to that point and put in the work and try to be healthy when the time comes to make that run.
Damari Carroll missing from the Atlanta Hawks this season, so they're not as dominant as they were. In fact, they're not even in the top eight. Is that the real difference for Atlanta, or is there something else going on down there?
I mean, they've had some issues on the wing, certainly, and I think opponents have started to figure out how to slow down the Hawks a little bit. You've seen it in Kyle Korver in particular. He was such a huge part of their offense and still is such a huge part of their offense. But last year, their offense was driven around his shooting, and he was able to shoot really well from three, led the league in a three-point percentage, and you know, really helped to bolster that offense, in addition to having a guy like Carroll come on big on the wing. But now Carroll's gone. And defenses have figured out how to slow down Kyle Korver. They're running him off the line. His share of long twos among his total points and total points scored and total shots taken is more than doubled since last season. So things are changing for him. Things are changing for the Hawks, and certainly not for the better right now.
The New Orleans Pelicans were a playoff team last year, new coach in Alvin Gentry, and things aren't really clicking for them. Do you expect them to be making some moves to get Anthony Davis some other help?
I mean, he could certainly use the help, and they could certainly use the moves. We'll see what kind of moves those entail, because I don't know, you know, exactly who the Pelicans would put up to begin with. You figure they need all the playmaking they can get, so they'll try to stick to some extent with Tyreke Evans, Eric Gordon, and Drew Holiday. Though Gordon, they might look to move, you think, because he's going to be a free agent. If they could get something in exchange for him, that could be helpful. There's been some talk that maybe Ryan Anderson might be on the move at some point. I think the tweak, though, I think the thing they got to do is get their act together in-house. They got to get their perimeter guys all up to speed. Evans, Gordon, Holiday have all been banged up to some extent this season. And perhaps start playing Anthony Davis more alongside Alexi Ajinsa. Those two have really done well on both ends of the floor together so far this season. They just haven't played that much together because Ryan Anderson and Omer Asik are Anthony Davis's most common partners up front.
Josh Martin, Bleacher Report, as we talk about some NBA. So we continue through the night here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Josh, what exactly are the Philadelphia 76ers doing? What is the overall plan? What do they want to do?
It's been the same thing from the beginning. They want to get a superstar. They want to get someone who can be the centerpiece of their franchise so that they can build a team that can contend for a title. They don't want to just be middle of the pack. That was part of the goal when the team changed hands. Josh Harris bought the team and brought on Sam Hinkie was, you know, we want to be great. We don't want to just be good enough to get to the playoffs. We want to be able to win titles and bring the city of Philadelphia some relief from its constant sports sorrow. But unfortunately, in trying to get to that point, they've deepened that sorrow. They're still searching for that superstar, potentially. You figure Jahlil Okafor could be a really good player, but transcendent type. They're hoping to get someone like a Ben Simmons, who's likely to be the number one pick in 2016. And in their mind, to get there, you have to be as bad as you possibly can. And I think they've hit rock bottom this season.
Is it easy? They get labeled tanking. Is it easy to prove that they are doing those things?
Certainly from a management perspective, you have to think with the extent that they've stayed away from bringing in veteran free agents. They've, you know, tried to make these trades at every turn with Michael Carter-Williams among them to try to maximize the value of the assets they have on hand. The fact that, you know, most of their roster is, I think, all except Carl Landry are first or second year players. You know, these guys mostly are second-round picks and undrafted free agents. You know, the Sixers right now are clearly in a position where they're not trying to win. They're trying to get some value out of some young players, some cheap young players, and hopefully find some good cheap young players to be part of their rotation in the years to come. It is very clearly, I don't know if you could call it tanking, call it rebuilding, call it whatever you want. All it means right now is that basketball in the city of Philadelphia is an abomination more often than not.
Josh Martin, again, Bleacher Report on the NBA. One quick thought on the Eastern Conference. And we talked about Cleveland and their Chicago, and there's kind of the favorites. The middle there, the Indiana, the Miami, the Charlotte, anybody there playing with some serious dice here in terms of being a legitimate team?
I think the Miami Heat are, because they're really good defensively. They've been one of the best defensive teams in the league from the jump. Clearly, they have some offensive talent in their starting five with Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, certainly their 20-point capable scorers. Gordon Dragic has proven himself a capable scorer in this league. So they've got some firepower in that lineup. And their bench, which everyone thought was going to be a real weakness for this team, has come to be a strength for them, thanks in large part to the work that Justice Winslow and Tyler Johnson have put in. Mari Stoudemire has been okay in that group. Gerald Green has done some nice things. So I think Miami could be a tough team for Cleveland. I think potentially Indiana could with Paul George. And, you know, Charlotte, they're not going to be Zion killers necessarily, but with the way that they're able to shoot the three and spread the floor, and they play some solid defense, know, I wouldn't put it past them to give Cleveland more of a challenge than anyone expected.
Josh Martin again, Bleacher Report. Appreciate your time tonight. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, 800-777-2907, and we continue to look at the NBA, giving you kind of an update of what's going on this season. And again, a lot of attention on Golden State, and rightfully so, as they went 24-0. But look at what San Antonio is doing. As I said earlier, their margin of victory is the best in the NBA. Their defense is the best in the NBA. And like you mentioned with Kawhi Leonard, being able to continue that run of what the San Antonio Spurs have been able to do. I mean, look, Golden State deserves all the attention, but if you're looking for those secondary stories in the league right now, here's a good one there in San Antonio. 800-777-2907. It is Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on.
Back to him.
Back to the Quicken Loans Studios.
And back to Tony D.
Glad you could be with us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. As we continue through the night tonight, little NBA. Oh, so the looks like Monmouth's going to the NCAA tournament, huh?
Yeah, I hope so, at least.
I do, too. They beat Georgetown. Good job, boys. Bench went crazy, as they normally do. Look, we need a little bit of flavor, right?
Oh,
it's all the same teams, and first rounds are always fun. You get a few upsets, but I want a little bit of flavor. And this team's got spunk and sass.
And I've started watching a lot more college basketball over the last few weeks. There's not a lot of good teams. It's just such a. I mean, the last few years hasn't been that good. I mean, there's great players coming through, but they're all one and done. And then we have to wait for the young, especially early in the season. Basically through Christmas until conference season starts, these young kids are getting acclimated to the game, and that's when they start. So hopefully it picks up once conference gets going. But it's been bad, and you could say the same thing about the NBA. The NBA is awful. There's two, three good teams. That's it.
Everything, there is something to be said about, you see, I've always warned people against, you know, parity, because it just doesn't, you don't know the level you're at when you have, you know, parity. If you see a lot of teams that are kind of beating each other up and playing and some good nights and bad nights, you can't read that correctly. It can mean everybody's good or everybody's bad. I just get the feeling with the NBA, there's just not a lot of very good teams.
No.
And there's just a lot of disappointment. And the fun thing about college basketball is that you're right. There's an acclimation process the players have to go through, like when they get into the league, and these young kids are trying to fit in, and they're trying to learn a system or whatever it is that they're doing. The problem that I see is when I watch some of these games with college basketball is that I don't know what I'm comparing what I'm seeing to. Like I don't like it, like if I'm watching a team, I don't know if the team, like if I watch Oklahoma Villanova like I did when they were playing in Pearl Harbor, I'm watching two pretty good basketball teams. I like the way Oklahoma plays, but I don't know how it translates. Like I don't know where, you know, I don't know how that translates later on or in the tournament. I don't know what that means today. I may know what it means in late February. I just don't know what it means today, because I don't know in games like that what a coach is trying to do, right? You may have a coach trying some new things or trying a different lineup or doing some variety of things. So this win may not seem as big later on, or this win might mean something else when the full evaluation occurs. So I want a team like Monmouth that's got a little bit of a fun side story with this bench. And I just want a little bit of character into this tournament. But there's another story that's going on in college basketball that I think people are going to miss out on. And that's a player we've been talking about for a number of weeks, and that's Ben Simmons of LSU. We are not going to see him play in the NCAA tournament. They are going nowhere near this thing unless they win the SEC in some miracle run like we've seen what some other teams do. But they're going nowhere near the NCAA tournament, and this kid is one of the best players in the country, or could be one of the top players in the country when it's all said and done. And you won't see 5 seconds of him. You won't see us. He doesn't deserve to be on any CBS broadcast whatsoever. His team doesn't anyway. He does. His team doesn't. You're not going to see much of him at all.
Do you think, saying what you just said, do you think he made a mistake by going to LSU? Or do you think, you know what? Hey, I'm going here. I'm going to be the star. Yeah, it might be a bad team, but I'm going to go here. I'm going to work on my game. I'm going to be able to kind of do what I want in the games because I'm the only good player on this team. Do you think he made a mistake? Because it really doesn't matter for him if he goes to the NCAA tournament and plays well. He's going to be the number one or number two pick in the draft. Most likely number one, no matter what happens.
He is chosen LSU in the exact opposite way we've seen highly touted recruits choose their school. Because if you are knowing you're going to go to the NBA and knowing it's a one and done deal for you, then most of the kids, if push comes to shove, I'm going to choose a team that can win the national title. Might as well get a championship out of the deal if I'm going to spend 1 year or at least try to get a championship out of the deal. He chose LSU for whatever reason he chose LSU. Maybe he likes the coach. Maybe that's where he's from. Maybe that's where somebody he loves wants him to be. I don't know. But the reality of it is he chose a not very good SEC team. And the thing is that you would think a kid like him could change it, but that team is just not good around him. They have one other good player. That's Tim Quarterman. That's about it for the team that he has. So either he knew this was going to happen or right now he's extremely disappointed. But I will tell you this. And look, I think if you're an 18-year-old kid and you have to play college basketball or you love basketball, how many 18-year-old kids think, well, I don't get the wear and tear that, you know, of other players because I'm not in the NCAA tournament? I think if you're in college basketball, March Madness is something you kind of would aspire to, right? That you'd want to be like, I at least want to try that. That looks fun. At least want to give myself a chance to compete there. I don't think at 18 you're wondering like, oh, how much damage am I doing or any of those other stuff by playing even more games. I think he picked LSU probably for a couple of other reasons other than we're going to the tournament and win an NCAA championship. I think he picked LSU for something else, but that something else means in March he ain't going to be playing. And I don't know. I mean, maybe it sits well with them. I don't know. But they're not a very good basketball team. So for all intents and purposes for Ben Simmons, if he's on some CBS game of the week because they're playing Kentucky or he's on the SEC network, catch him. Because he'll probably be the number one pick in the draft. And if he is the number one pick, you want to say, oh, yeah, I remember when he was in college, rather than, oh, yeah, is that the guy from the school I really didn't care much about? So
I just wonder, you know,
kind of too bad.
Right. It really is too bad because we aren't going to get to see really what he's about in the college level. But I wonder if he really just doesn't care about a championship. If he's going to a place.
No, he doesn't. That's clear.
Go work on his game. He's out of the limelight. He doesn't have to worry about going to Kentucky and playing with, you know, 10 All-Americans and trying to fit in with all these great players. Like you said, there's one other good player on that team, and he can go there, and he can just do what he wants. If he wants to work on his post-up game, all right, I can do that for 2-3 games. Now I can go work on my jumper. It doesn't matter because we're not going to win.
Yeah, but I also think that I don't think he went to LSU saying, oh, I'm going to go to the suckiest school I can possibly go to in the SEC or one of the worst. I think he went there thinking there's got to be like – A coach can sell you. Like you can go, oh, I think in this system I can get what I want out of it. There are guys who are not going to go to Kentucky, even if John Calipari, you know, paves the way to Lexington and gold. They're just not going to go to Kentucky because there are too many players of a similar like. They do want to either A, get maximum play time, or B, get. Just not a lot of minutes because of wear and tear or whatever. A lot of guys go for a variety of reasons. I agree with you. I don't think he thought LSU would win a championship. I'd be really surprised if he thought LSU wouldn't make the tournament with him on it. I would think that he probably thought they'd get at least a berth. Maybe not even get to the Final Four or even into the Sweet 16 for all that matters. But I thought he'd at least play a March. I don't think they are at all.